Welcome to the Iron Podcast. Thanks very much for joining us. We're here to explore a little bit of a topic on potential. We're looking at Sparks today, kind of freedom, taking responsibility for ourselves, kind of living our own lives and what that may look like, what it might not look like, and how we're doing with that right now. So as ever, bit of a sense sort of heat check on that one. How are you feeling it?
Mate, big topic for the latest episode.
The biggest.
Two dudes talking.
Yeah.
And
it's what we should have called the podcast. We should have called the podcast.
I think it's taken.
Right.
No, mate, I like this one. I'm interested to see where you're going to kick us off.
Okay, well, I guess where I'm going to kick us off a little bit is this concept of kind of leadership to begin with, because I find it quite interesting to think about leadership and even things like performance when, if we are, I guess, beholden to patterns of reaction, if we are beholden to the way that people think or feel about us, and we need permission from the outside to feel a certain way, and if the way we feel is kind of often at the heart of our ability to perform, then I'm not sure how often we do any leading at all. We're just kind of led, almost living by accident, by the way things turn out around us and by the way that people think and feel about what we do. So beholden to people's opinions, beholden to the outcomes of life, and also beholden to the way that we've already learned things in our life. And as a result, I kind of wonder, how much do we own our own lives? How much is our performance actually ours? And even when it comes to relationships, it's almost like if we're going to connect to people, but if our connections are conditional based on the fact that we need people to feel this way about us as a result of our interactions, then are we not more just using people to get what we need the whole time? Are we not just using this life to get what we need? And then the final question, when we do get what we need and what we want, does it really do it? Is it worth it? So that's the answer to that question.
Yeah, I was going to say good chat. And I hope everybody enjoys the guest episode on Thursday.
Well, we've outlined the issue. And now to go a bit deeper, because I guess my question to you would be, and it's a big one, how much do you think you're living your own life?
I think it's very difficult to separate this from a little bit of the getting older element to it. I think there's a functional ignorance and arrogance and almost naivety of youth where I don't think you're supposed to be aware of these bigger topics, because I think you need to kind of do some stuff and get some mileage on the vehicle before you can kind of start maybe delving deeper into these things. But I've been hugely outcome led in my decision making at times, and likewise a lot of the paths that I've chosen have been in order to achieve things like respect or confirmation or that I wanted to have a thing or be a thing or be able to do something, or all these sort of, like you would say, waypoints that become very fixed markers for your life. And I think the change that I've it sounds like cliche, and it's something that we talk about all the time, but I think we're almost guilty of bringing it up in every chat we have, but the process is more important than the result, and the process is everything. And that's what I've become more aware of, is being less caught up in what happens at the end, but trying to be more focused on enjoying the experience as a whole. And I think, yeah, I've been fortunate enough that various things have happened, particularly for me, becoming a father meant that your kind of views and focuses change. And then you start to understand things differently because there's that huge shift in you from, right, I've now got these little people that are completely reliant on us in order to survive. And that causes you to kind of change your whole outlook on a lot of things because there's a massive emotional change in you. So I would say that, yes, for me, as I've got older, I've shifted away from maybe being so concerned with the outside affirmations and what that means to other people. But I think that's been a gradual process, and it's not something that I would say, oh, look at me, I've got this nailed. I would say it's just something that I've become aware of and try to catch myself where I'm going down like a bit of a dead end, where I'm going to cause myself some issues.
Yeah, I think a lot of outcome is important when, especially around, we've spoken about survival needs. It's important to make decisions based on good intel and previous form when it comes to creating an environment of security, safety, you know, shelter over the head, food and all those kind of things. So that's interesting. And that survival needs, I can see why, you know, when people are in states of survival, your mind goes, or the everything goes sensory based to the outside, looking for patterns, looking for threats, looking for ways out, ways in, whatever it might be. It's very much an outward focus. And once those survival needs are looked after, then maybe there's this opportunity to turn inwards. But I don't think what's happened is that. I think what's happened is we just extend what survival means. So it goes from need to keep my body alive and keep my family alive, but then it goes to, but what if I had a bit more? And then I need to keep my reputation alive because I want more. And if I want this, and I need to keep this alive, and I can't have people thinking that, and I can't have that, so I'm fighting against that, and I'm desperate for that, and I'm needing that. And suddenly the whole world is this effort to get somewhere and to get what we think is our survival, but it's holding us back, I think, from fully experiencing life beyond just that sensory outlook, where we're just looking strategically for the next step and the next, you know, way to shift forward to, you know, suddenly that new house and family is no longer a nice to have, but a must have. And now we're just doing whatever we can for it. And I keep harping back to that, those deathbed revelations where people kind of come back with everything you can imagine and say, don't do what I did. I kind of had one of those myself from a rugby death perspective of being like, you've got it all. And you're like, yeah, it isn't what you think it is. It doesn't do what you think it's going to do, the same way that getting clear of an actual physical threat makes you feel that relief of being like, oh, thank goodness for that. But then, of course, new threats come. The same way that getting past that idea of, oh, I've got this, and then suddenly you've got to fight to keep it, and then you've got to fight to get more.
I think a lot of the topics that have come up, particularly with some of the amazing guests that we've had the opportunity to speak to, and then you and me have done a second-rate job of discussing them in between, is if you get that itch of, is there something more, or am I doing things that are holding myself back, then now there's a fantastic opportunity to have awesome conversations that will scratch that itch. You know, there's some amazing people out there writing some amazing books, doing some amazing films, doing great interviews and stuff, where you can go and have those chats or find people that you can have those conversations with in your life and discuss that. But not everybody is in that place, if that makes sense. Not everybody's as interested in these topics as, say, you and I are. And so you've got like a broad spectrum of journeys that people are on. Some people are still oblivious to this. Other people think that this is like the only thing, and then it's finding that balance. But I think understanding, as you put it at the start, that we have the control and the freedom is that of choice, that how you view something is entirely your responsibility. And as you've did the great example before, where I think, if you don't mind me doing a really bad job of quoting you, was something along the lines of, there's days where you wake up and if you're in a certain mood, the injuries and everything that you had in your career is a real negative. And there's other days where you feel in a slightly different mood when you wake up, and those injuries have been something that's pushed you onto something new. So that narrative of your story changes depending on your mood in the current time.
Yeah. So go on. No,
you. I was going to say that because I've done a bad job of that.
No. I'm not going to clear it out. I'm going to just push into that, because the idea that the outside has a direct, or has direct permission to influence how I feel on the inside, can't happen unless it's facilitated by or agreed to by my own beliefs, my own inner understandings. So my relationship with myself and with the world, like you said, is my kind of responsibility, but it doesn't feel that way because it feels like there's a truth to the way I see it right now. But that truth is kind of what you're talking about there, which is my memory. My memory is providing all my information I've got for how I see the world, what I've seen before and how I've understood it. And I think this is kind of the interesting bit about getting past or maybe having some more space between the impact of how other people feel or think about you or how things turn out. The relationship I find interesting there is not so much me and other people, but me and my old self. In other words, my old self that's made up of all the things I understood growing up and all the things that I saw and came to put together as a sort of structure of logic or whatever, traumatic understandings that went in quite deep, quite quickly, other ones that were picked up gradually over time, other ones that were just made maybe in the absence of something. But certainly that those learnings are what is the key opportunity for me to work with rather than try and work with other people's opinions. And I think what that means is, for me, as you said, in the now right here, if I experience that hang of a certain feeling that I recognize from before, if I'm able to somehow find more space with it, more room with it, if I'm able to transcend it slightly, respond differently to it now, it kind of, for me, releases it from my memory. And I did hear a great quote that was, our memories, when relieved of their, almost, this is not the quote, because no one would ever do a quote that bumbles around like this. No one writes bumbling quotes. But
well, mate, I have read some of your notebooks. And
well, this one, a bumbling version, memory without the emotion is wisdom. That's kind of the clean version. But memory with the emotion is a story that normally has limits to it. But when you remove the emotion from our memory, the way that it was, the way that it was inducted into our memory, you know, it was pressed in with that emotional thing of feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm really vulnerable here and I've learned this, and it goes in with that sense of vulnerability. When you kind of remove or release some of that vulnerability in the now, it kind of releases from the memory and you start looking at things differently. And I think that's kind of the big opportunity, is that rather than looking at it as a kind of, we've got a past and a future, it's almost like, well, it's just now with memory and imagination. And if we explore how we can feel right now, then we open up our memory completely to being a field of information so much more than I think we realize, that we can shape together to form the utensils and the tools that we need right now. And then imagination opens up as well. We can start dreaming again of the impossible and the most marvelous things, because we're not beholden to that story of how things were and how they're going to be. And I think that exploration of the now me, where anything's possible, is where the opportunity is, as opposed to the idea that if we can just get things perfect around me, then the future me will feel better, as opposed to just being like, if I can come to ease and peace and create more space and come to a different relationship right here and now, that's where the big opportunity is.
It's one of those things that ties in with just being very mindful of what reference points you give yourself for what it is that you hold important in your life. So a good example of this is, I'm fortunate enough that when I work with people in a training capacity, it's one-on-one and we're the only people in the gym. So there's no reference point.
Yeah.
There's no, oh, that guy over there is lifting way more than me, or oh my word, I feel like she looks better than I do, or those types of things. So you have this ability to have a very almost like false reality to create huge positivity. So let's say you came into the gym and did an amazing session, and pick a random exercise. Let's say you were deadlifting and you did the heaviest deadlift or the most deadlifts you've done at a certain weight you've ever done, and you're on an absolute high. Now, the moment you take that and go looking for what other people do, you will lose any joy in your achievement, because there's always someone doing other things, who's doing better, who's done more, lifted heavier, whatever, is bigger than you. There's always going to be that risk. And if there's not, first up, enjoy it because you're the best in the world. Or secondly, there'll be someone who's pretending they are. or there's going to be AI telling you that someone, that there's someone. So the point being that this comparison of once you take any achievement and externalize it and compare it to others' achievements, you completely ruin it. And so it's that the strength to be able to go genuinely, as you were talking about, that your measurement is against yourself and your own learnings and your own journey and what you want to do. If you can keep it in that realm, you'll get a much better understanding about how well things are going. Because, you know, I had this as a very like tangible bit where during when you and I were playing, my opportunity to play was in the position that you played. So it was inevitable that I was going to be compared to you. And that was, you know, for whatever reasons, that was never going to be a great look and it was going to be a difficult comparison to make because, you know, they were, albeit your feet are smaller than mine, there were still big boots to fill.
Yeah.
So long-winded way of saying it's that thing of like, accept your experience for what it is and that it doesn't mean anything really to anybody else other than it's an anecdotal way for you to talk about what you've done, but you can't compare it or use it as a tool for anyone else because it is exactly yours and yours only.
I agree. The comparison thing's interesting because even if you're doing really well, yeah, you feel you're doing, you're enjoying, like you said, you've got that joy in what you're doing. When you compare it to someone else, even if you win in that comparison, joy turns to a kind of victorious kind of pride or pleasure in someone else's being less than you. It's not joy. So like you said, even when you win by comparison, you're not winning.
There's something in that superiority complex about then you need to be better all the time.
So win or lose, you're suffering by comparison. The other part is about comparing with your old self. I like that, but in the field of physical, I can see that.
It's useful in that sphere.
But when you get older, at some point you're not going to be bench pressing more than you did at 25 when you're 85, unless of course you were really taking it easy at 25.
But that's the long game. If you're sandbagging your bench press for 25 years just so you can top out in your 50s, then hats off to you because that's a great effort.
That's an interesting dynamic.
That's the goal setting, though, isn't it? That's understanding that in different times of your life, particularly, again, you can use it, you know, the gym and training and fitness and health is a microcosm for the rest of your life. But just as an example in that area, your goals will change because you are simply not able to do the highest numbers when you get older. It doesn't mean you can't do amazing things, but your goals shift and you point yourselves at different goals that become more important in that time in your life.
But I think this is the important separation, is that surface and the deeper, there becomes room there where the identity becomes in the deeper and the surface is something you can play with. Whereas when your feet of identity are stuck in the surface, you know, like the crashing waves on the surface, rather than being at the deep sea of where it's unmoving and it's absolutely constant and, you know, everything is one. Whereas on the surface, there's crashing about and this. If your identity is in the surface, it's going to be stress all the time. There's nothing else to it. It's a bit like, for some reason, the analogy comes to me, yes, of a tree with roots, you know, 1,000-mile roots going deep down under the surface, which means when the strong wind blows, the tree is enjoying that beautiful breeze. Whereas if your feet of identity are right under the surface or are in that tree, when the wind blows, you're hanging on for dear life. And I think about it as driving it in a convertible car. Do you know what I mean?
With the top down.
But if you had just the wind going through your hair, you're like, I love this. But if you felt like I felt once on that pirate ship, fairground
Jessington
ride.
World of Adventures.
Yeah, when I wasn't tall enough to be on that ride, and every time it went up, I literally felt like I was coming out. And it's, you know, when they talk about like a thrill ride, that was once and done for me.
That was beyond white knuckle. That was
white. I was hanging on by my feet in that. But that experience is one where there's no joy there because you're not playing with it. You're like, this could be me gone. I mean, you know, on a Chessington sort of ride. And then there's the idea about being fully rooted a bit deeper, which doesn't mean that you don't experience the disappointment, the ups and downs, but you recognize that surface area is something to play with. Because being stuck up in that identity area of surface, you know, outcomes and this and that and all the functional stuff, you know, I am what I do and I am how I do, etc. I am how other people think of me. You kind of concrete yourself into becoming an object of this world as well. Like a ball, like a cue ball on a snooker table that's just banging into other balls the whole time. And everyone's trying to get to where they want to go, knocking you out the way. And everyone's looking at what they've got versus someone else. It feels a bit like in that state, there's no other way to live but to live the way we are. Comparison, competition, stress, fight or flight, do your best. And when it comes, someone says relax, it's like, well, how can I?
This is the in danger of sounding like we're bringing this round to what we're supposed to be talking about.
Oh, geez, that'd be
about
nice,
the freedom. But that is the freedom. What you're talking about there, in my mind, is that, yes, have core ethics, a core structure, have whatever beliefs you hold important to you and all these other things. But if you start to see life through very specific lenses, you're going to get very specific experiences and very specific outcomes. But if you have that ability to have freedom, in inverted commas, being in whatever moment you're in, you can play whatever role you need to play that feels right, that you want to be, that's going to make that experience what you want it to be. That's freedom.
Yeah.
In the sense of what we're talking about with identity.
Yeah.
It's but not that, obviously there's different definitions and different spheres of life where that you can't use that definition as freedom.
But I think
for,
that's
for the, other things. But
I do think that's the freedom that that what happens on the inside of us belongs to us. And what happens on the outside, therefore, is something you can play with to a degree and also can respect and revere in the way that it's helping us to go on that journey of taking more responsibility for the inside. Because I think you see someone, yeah, probably me, let's say a few years back, who regards themselves as a good person with the right ethics and who knows what this means and gets it right and knows how things should be and how they shouldn't be. And you're walking along. All it would take was for some mischievous imp to say, look at that person there, watch this. It'll take me a second to get them from, I'm a good person, I bring happiness every I watch, we'll turn them into an example of anger. Just poke them, because their buttons are set, because you're in, I was set in that way that it's like, this is right, this is wrong, this is wrong. And because of that, you become enormously predictable, but also easy to manipulate or leadable. There's a word for this, which I haven't found yet, which is making me use these sort of self-constructed versions, but
I was still with it.
Suggestible.
Mischievous imp is still where I'm stuck.
Well, the mischievous imp, the scallywag, who is
the rascal with his horseplay and tomfoolery.
Yes, who is poking the bear, as it were. But you see what can happen is you can go from being a society that has it right, something happens, and suddenly you go off on this tangent of you can become the exact opposite of what it is that you preach, as it were.
Yeah, it's the sheeple and being manipulated.
Yeah,
you're easily bought, you're easily coerced into following certain things.
But we've seen this both on the receiving end and to opposition when you're playing a game of sport. If you get a read on how someone's wired, you've got them. Yeah, that's what you do with tactical moves. You say, well, we'll do this because we know that that person fears this. Yeah, for example, that person doesn't trust their speed. So we know that if we do this, they'll go.
Yeah, you get a mismatch. You get a mismatch of abilities.
And we know what they're going to do. Now, this brings me to the perhaps one of the reasons why this conversation came up was I was just looking at the idea that at the moment we're led by all kinds of things, whether it's you know, social circles, whether it's politics, our influences, what's happening on this. But you've also got the idea about algorithms now surrounding us. And it's so amazing that an algorithm could probably just shape the entire society. If you want,
well, your whole outlook on life is shaped. If that's all you're watching it through is through a small screen, then you are at the risk of having your life told to you in a certain way.
And if we're evolving from the animal kingdom to have self-awareness and to be able to investigate this kind of who we are and find this freedom of expression and find out what our purpose is, what our uniqueness is, and to find that safety space to work together, to come together, to create something like this, but we can return to that that sort of animal kingdom herd majority thing so quickly. We can be shepherded into just being, here's a word for you, consumerist objects. What I mean by that is we're just desperate to consume. And so here we're given this, and it's like, oh, and that ability to just play people and to wonder how much are we being played before we can actually find out what it is we really want. For example, the not enough means that if we went into all of our that are lucky enough to have houses and went, how much stuff do we have that we don't need? And why do we have it?
But it's like when you look into like the science behind advertising, and here's one for you, the dopaminergic systems.
Right. Gosh, like you got me there. You've got me there.
I don't know if that's a word. But how the dopamine system works and keeping everybody, you know, the aim of short clips and very to the point and bright lights and distraction and wanting, and it sells you products. And there's like the overt and the covert science to it all about why you want certain products and things. You realize that how easy it is for you to have your opinions and your wants and desires skewed towards certain products by outside forces.
Yeah.
And we do that to ourselves as well.
Yeah.
Because how guilty can you be of walking past, or, you know, we might watch a match tape of someone we're playing and one of their players had outrageous speed, and you'd be looking at it going, oh man, I wish I had that sort of speed.
Yeah.
And you're taking it from what, a 5-second video clip, and automatically it's starting to adjust your goals and make you think about differently about, you move away from thinking what can I do to what can't I do.
Yeah. And also, but also even just things like if your old you, the past you, wants to get you to do something that it's used to doing, it just has to drop some fear in the mix. Just press you on fear. If we don't do this, this could happen. So, you know, that old you, when you're in that survival mechanism, is constantly looking and saying, you're catastrophizing it. What if this happens? What if now? All it's getting you to do what it needs you to do in order to keep being the same and to survive itself. It's asking you to keep making those decisions, and it doesn't do it through, you're so joyful, I trust that you'll make decisions. That it's saying, no, if you're joyful, you're not going to make these decisions. So in this fearful state, I know you'll keep coming back to me.
Exactly. It's the body wants that homeostasis, wants things to stay the same. And that's why forming new habits or making any big changes in your life on whatever area it is always feels hugely intimidating, because essentially you're fighting your own chemistry a lot of the time. Even though your brain is going, I really want this, I really want this, you will have withdrawal symptoms from if you're trying to give up certain things, cut back on certain things, change this, change that. There's always going to be the thing where the body's going to try and fight you because it wants to remain the same. It wants things nice and stable, nice and easy.
Yeah, exactly. I remember watching years ago a Derren Brown show, which basically he had two advertising teams in, and he said, right, I've already drawn what you're going to draw here. And then explained the business that he wanted them to come up with a creative proposition for, creatively, like a logo and a slogan. And he said, I've already drawn it. This will stay under lock and key. But you're going to draw what I've drawn pretty much, but don't worry about it. You've got 3 weeks to work this out in your teams. And they ended up drawing pretty much exactly what he'd drawn. And they couldn't believe it. They were so sure that they'd come up with this creative, amazing thing that had come from their inner, you know, immensity and just being this, wow, both teams, same thing. And when he explained how he'd done it, they both teams were staying in the same sort of hotel or area, and they all got taxis into the place in the morning. And the deal was on the way, and the taxi ride on the way there, strategically positioned with just different advertising boardings with messages taking place. So subliminally, as they went on their ride into work each day, he was just subliminally just pushing messages.
Suggesting it to them.
And they drew exactly that. Now it makes me think, what are we doing? Are we not just repeating our past? And what does true creativity come from? Is it just repackaging what we've seen into something we think is a bit better, or hoping it's a better bit aligned with our intentions? But does it really ever go there, versus that big breakout of a cycle, which allows you to step free of what we've seen, to not just buy what our physical senses have told us and recorded, and with the feelings in which it's been recorded, but to step out of that cycle, because otherwise a whole life can go by and you look back and go, I just acted according to these billboards that I saw along my journey. The billboard of this win, this loss, this person did this, this person did that. But what does it take to come to this now moment where you are brand new? So rather than I'm going to try and change my sort of self-harming story that I have for this, you know, my unhelpful story that I have for this, I'm going to try and change it into a good one, but using the parts that I've already got, which means it can probably be this and this, and that's about it, versus total ability to reinvent and breathe and be here now and see what really is, instead of just seeing what we've already seen through the eyes of now and almost just projecting it onto this immense infinite world. We project this limited cyclical kind of experience of who we think we are. What does it take to break out of that?
From my experience of watching the movie They Live, special sunglasses.
Right. Now that's an obscure reference. There is probably about six people that have seen that film.
Listen,
two of them are in this chat.
It's a classic. I've watched it a lot of times, so I may count for more people. Yeah.
You're five of those six there.
Yeah, I have. Under different names, because I can't remember my login for half my accounts. No, but I think there's the Derren Brown thing is that's a great example of when it's put plain and clear, and someone clearly explains how the danger of being manipulated like that, it does bring yourself to ask
but
question.
What's different?
Of how much,
what's different
how much
to
money?
Now? What's different to now with that?
Nothing. Nothing at all. But it's like that thing of when you ask the question of what it's like to lead and how much responsibility do we have, then it's also you start to realize that there are other things at play other than even just the internal battle that you've got going on. There's other factors to play into it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't think anyone is, this is my other feeling, is that people at the top of these, and I could be one of them. Yeah, I'm going to drop a little advert in for Number One Living, my drinks company.
Code, well, we need Derren Brown. Brown to come and help us with the podcast.
I am 20, gets you 20% off anything on that. Amazing health drinks, taste great, brilliant for your gut, et cetera, et cetera. That was a real advert, actually, by the way. That code exists. I am 20. numberoneliving.com. But you see what I mean? It's like, I'm part of it as well. And I'm not, am I coming at it from a position of, I have absolute clarity, enlightened experience, limitless of my limitless being, and yet I'm just going to put this out there. So when people say that people are controlling, no one has got the perfect, beautiful answer and is peddling the consumerism. Yeah, no one's, everyone that sort of finds that beautiful answer kind of disappears into a beautiful life. Because, you know, I heard Sadhguru, again, one of someone I like to go out for some of these, go to for some of these interesting kind of discussions, talking about how people that reach that moment of enlightenment in their life, 99% of the time, they'll leave the body at the same time they have that experience. That almost, and the idea that people that have that experience but stay around on this earth do through to a technique of deliberate attachment. They deliberately attach themselves to something so that they can stay here. And it feels almost like that's the kind of journey, is to find ourselves getting very attached to a lot of things, a lot of ideas, but to gently, as you say, over age, find our way to revealing a bit more of who we really are and our true power as we get older. But when you don't have that journey, when you get older, you just end up revealing your sort of weakening side physically. You just become less of a player in life when you get older, if it's all about physical. But I think in the aging perspective, it's quite the opposite. Yes, there's things physically you can do which can expand anyway, but there's also wisdom, there's also this side, but there's also connectivity and a true connection to who you are that comes with just practicing over time certain things. But I find it fascinating and slightly scary as well that society and what's been is so cleverly leading us. Even though we might be thinking, yeah, I'm doing all this and it's me and it's me. And this is why the conversation we had last week about living our truth is a really interesting one. Because you're kind of like, I'm living my truth, I'm living my truth. And you go, oh no, I've just realized I'm not.
Yeah, well, to the extent that you think you are.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to get labeled tin hatters here. We're a virgin on the conspiracy theory element.
Well, do you know what? I think it's only as deep as your own experience. But I think what's fascinating is that if that journey, is it worth taking at least a step into? But it's like, but if not, like being on the rugby field and just finding it, yeah, that someone might just be pushing the buttons, but to be able to think clearly about what you really want and then to become an example of that rather than just, you know, like a walking mix of black and white opinions, which work in some situations, but as soon as they become stressed or challenged, they react in another way, which actually ends up being a bigger problem than the solution it was promising.
I think, like you say, it comes down to if it's something that there's an itch within you that pushes you to want to discover this. It's not saying that people that don't have an interest in this are A, B, or C compared to someone that does. It's just, you know, if it is something that interests you, now there's a lot of great conversations and people talking about it. So you would probably say, as much as you could say that on one side, we may be living in a society that's more attuned to being able to control us or attempting to control us than any other time, there's also more people out there talking about this, and there's always an outlet and conversations that are always going to be useful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and communities that can aid that. But then the danger of any community is that then gathers its own
echo chamber.
Exactly. But it's fascinating. Yeah, and a really cool one. I hope
it's like that cult we started. Oh, sorry. I wasn't going to talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's just you and me in it for now. And I'm not even sure how deeply in it you are.
I just bought the They Live DVD.
Well, exactly. So we've done a job for Derren Brown on this podcast, as well as They Live. And
bringing
Don't Forget
Rowdy Roddy Piper back into the public consciousness, which is much needed.
Yeah, and equally obscure. So, all right, amazing. Thanks, mate. Good to chat. And let's move on to another one. Some point soon.
Definitely.